Welcome to the Minibank Gang Podcast, episode 179. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens is pulling his sanitation route this morning and can't be on. Yeah. No, I can't remember where he had to go. But anyway, he's not able to be with us this morning, and we're very sad, and we hope everything's okay with Graham. No.
You just made that sound very ominous.
I know.
The guy just can't be here.
He just can't. Yeah, exactly. So you and Graham went to the Data Venue event, right?
Yeah, I believe this was a first time event. So Barb Bowen put it together over at Carlson School of Business, and a good time was had by all. We learned a whole lot about data, big data, and standardization of data, and management of data, and privacy, and all sorts of things. Had a chance to catch up with who I think is an internet legend. It was Doc Searles.
Yeah.
I spent some time with him and learned a great deal. So congratulations to all those folks. I don't know if there was necessarily anything earth-shaking that came out of the event, but I think everybody has a whole lot better understanding of data and what's happening to your data and what's being used and how it's being used.
So. Well, ironically, this morning in the Star Tribune, they had an article about how Minneapolis is grabbing license plates, and one of the reporters went off through the Open Data Act or something and was able to get his information and found over the last 7 months the Minneapolis police had stored his geolocation for going back and forth to work and then parked outside of a house. And, you know, he said, you know, anybody can have access to this data. Mm-hmm. And so how hard would it be to have data mining companies get a hold of it, or have even criminal elements get a hold of it and be able to start tracking your movements.
Mm-hmm.
Did they touch on any of the privacy? I'm sure there was privacy implication discussions like crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there were, a lot of different, discussions and topics. Doc Searles' big project is Project VRM, which is, I'm trying to remember what VRM stands.
Vendor Relationship Management.
No, it's not vendor resource management is what this VRM is. Excuse me.
Okay.
Excuse me. Yes. Vendor relationship management, vendor resource management. You pick it. It's there. But that's his project right now. So we talked about, what people are doing with data. I think one of the biggest quotes from Doc really kind of came out of, there are companies that believe that they can get a complete understanding of a customer strictly by their data. And tracking their data online. And he said that's ludicrous, and pointed to a couple of things. For example, that he was had gone to graduate school in his bio, and he's never been to graduate school and things like that. So it was a very enlightening conversation. Oh. And then we also had Kalia Hamblin was there from the Internet Identity Workshop. She did a nice piece on actually, got us all involved in the types of data, the types of personas that we are online. It was very interesting because you're not necessarily yourself online. You're a persona online, and you can be multiple personas. You can be the father persona, the husband persona, the witness protection plan persona. And
don't out me. Come on.
The data that's being collected from those different personas is what's defining you on online, not necessarily the reality of who you are. So.
Well, we should data mine Tim. Just to see what we can find. Are we going to dig up anything, Tim?
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, it is a big deal to see what's going on. The infamous AOL release of data for people to be able to mine. And they discovered this woman in her 70s, and they were able to see they were able to track down who she was based on her internet searches and the things that she was looking for. And so, it's not out of the realm of possibility that all these digital breadcrumbs we're leaving all over the place are going to be able to be collated and attached to us and mined. And
well, and if you have a smartphone, all of your location data is also out there.
Yeah, right.
You know, so if you don't trust Apple or Google, you know, it's it's they know where you've been.
Yeah.
You know.
We talked a lot about at the Data Venue. We talked a lot about the concept of personal clouds, your personal cloud, and you know, being able to take all of the data that's out there in, you know, public clouds and making it your own personal cloud, so you can grant access to whoever or whomever you want to that information. So.
Yeah,
Phil Winley of Kinetics did a great job with that, and you know, made a very complex subject much easier to understand. So it was a great event. You know, kudos to Barb Bowen for putting it together. She did a stellar job, and I look forward to more people next year. That would be really nice. We had, you know, not a huge crowd by any means, but everybody paid a great deal of attention, and everybody was very accessible. We had a chance to spend time with all of the speakers ourselves. It was very informative. So
that's great. That's
yeah.
Great. I'm sorry I missed it. But that, you know, pesky business gets in
those
the way.
Pesky jobs. I hate those
things. I know. So, Windows 8. So what's going on with Windows 8 or going on with Metro or,
Yeah, I just, you know, I think we touched on this last week, didn't we, about the Metro. They can't say Metro anymore at Windows because of law litigation.
Right.
So they've come up with a new verbiage, and the official word from Windows is Metro style no longer exists. They aren't Metro style apps anymore. No, they're Windows Store apps.
Yeah, they really blew it.
Yeah. And it's not Windows UI or Windows Design, or excuse me, Metro Design or Metro UI. It's now Windows UI and Windows Design.
So. Yeah, you know, the old Steve Jobs quote that Microsoft doesn't have any taste. They clearly don't. I mean, this is Windows is a horrible brand for a mobile device.
Yeah.
And embracing Windows over, you know, Metro would have been a great name for this. And they've got the Surface with, you know, Microsoft Surface is a good name, strong. For them to get wigged out by basically the Costco of Germany, which is Metro,
right?
And not like come up with some sort of a negotiated licensing of the name is just, it's crazy.
It's that concept of just pay the man.
I'm sure they'd be okay. And they would sell, you know, at Metro, you could probably go in there and buy Metro devices.
Yeah.
It'd be perfect.
Yeah.
So obviously the people in Redmond, I know why this is. It's because Steve Ballmer is in love with the Windows brand. But it's to the company's detriment.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you can't call something Windows style when you haven't defined that style yet, or when the style is completely different and new.
Right. Well, the Metro design language is radically different than anything, especially Windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Windows Metro would be better, but obviously they're not going to go there. So
no, and it's It's just amazing. This is such a vital step for Windows, for Microsoft to move into this new space, to be successful in mobile and also continue to grow on the PC or desktop or laptop space. This is so vital to them. This Windows 8 and this Windows Phone 8 initiative, that yet they can't seem to help but step on their own dick. They can't get out of their own way on this deal.
I think I need to make one of my bold predictions, just like when I never said that Apple wouldn't do a 7-inch iPad,
yes.
which apparently they're going to do now. Actually, it's closer to 8, but anyway.
That's your out.
But to bring this back to Microsoft, I think that Surface and Windows 8 is going to be, you know, it's going to get well reviewed. It'll be like what happened with Palm. I mean, it's going to be, you know, like WebOS. WebOS was awesome, but they didn't sell enough devices, and they ran out of money, and they got bought by HP, and then they got, you know, just shut down. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a disaster for Microsoft and Windows 8, the whole Windows 8 thing. It'll be worse than Vista. And the only thing that's going to save them will be their enterprise business that'll mostly be running Windows 7. So, but we'll see.
You seem so bitter, Tim.
Well, it's just they have so much potential, and they're blowing it. It's crazy. It drives me insane.
Well, I don't know. Look, it's a marketing mistake. Yeah, I don't know if they've blown it yet. They're exhibiting all the signs of on the way to blowing it, but I don't think they've blown it yet. Because first and foremost, because I think the interface is very appealing, and I think works very well. I mean, Tim, even you commented when we went to the rollout of Windows Phone 8 and at Best Buy. You commented how snappy and smooth it was. So,
yeah, no, it's good. There were some crazy, kind of design things that were weird, but
little fluky things. But
yeah, it's half baked, as I remember.
I believe you said half baked. Yeah, I don't know if it was a half baked, but
well, it's. You turn your phone sideways and you expect the keyboard to, adapt to that space, and it really doesn't. Yeah. It sort of, I mean, it gets a little bit bigger, but then there's a big honking space off to one side. Stuff weird. Like that is inexcusable.
Yeah.
Even WebOS, it works.
Well, let's hear what Tim has to say about the Apple and Amazon security flaws.
Yeah.
That Matt Honan hacking. So there's a guy, for those that don't know the story, there's a guy named Matt Honan who wrote a blog post about how somebody had social engineered Apple support and were able to, he's a Wired magazine writer, but somebody had contacted Apple support and they social engineered his Apple ID and were able to help them get into his Gmail and then Twitter and yada, yada, yada. And it just, the whole thing just blew up on him and they basically took down everything.
And so Steve, have you changed your remote wiping after this?
I have not. And okay. one of the reasons is, so I also use, like he did, I use two-factor authentication for my Google account. Or I do, and he didn't use two-factor authentication. So even if somebody gets my password, I use LastPass. So I have 20 character passwords for everything. But I also use two-factor authentication for my Google account because that's the one that I really want to protect. So someone would have to get my phone, be able to get into my phone and have my password to my Gmail to be able to get into it and do it. So that's the one thing that, is really a big fence keeping people out. But this thing absolutely blew up on Apple specifically.
Oh, yeah.
And they've changed their policy.
Right. Well, that's the good news. And so is Amazon. So, yeah, social engineering was basically how the hacker got into this guy's account.
Right.
And then it cascaded because he used his mobile me or whatever, his main Apple ID as the keys to things like Twitter and other places. They were able to get into his Twitter account, which is Matt.
Yeah.
M-A-T. So it's, three. And that was, I think, what the hacker said he wanted. He wanted just because it was a cool Twitter account. But he was able to remote wipe his Mac and his iPhone.
So here's one of the biggest issues. And I've thought a lot about this because I'm trying to figure out what to do next. So I could use that 20 character string that's randomly generated by LastPass to create a password for my Apple ID account. But there's no frickin' way I can remember that when I'm going to update apps on my iPhone or iPad, or I'm going to use the Mac App Store. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And on and on. And it's just, I mean, it's there are a few things that I leave out there because I need to access them, 30 times a day.
Right. So that's when you use your pencil 123 password, right?
Hey, you're saying this publicly, Tim. What the hell?
Pencil 123. I'm going to make a note.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't know which ones.
Pencil 1990.
You don't know which ones are upper and lowercase.
Right. So. You don't. But this brings up a point where, lots of people have iOS devices now, and some people only have, iPhones or iPads or whatever. And they you can set them up now without even ever having to sync it with a computer. So you have this and it's totally backed up through iCloud. Everything's wonderful, but someone gets in, they can delete everything.
Right.
And then all your contacts, your photos, everything is gone.
Right. Right.
And it's very chilling. So,
well, Apple did buy a company that, has some sort of security technology, and I don't know a lot about it.
Yeah, yet. but they can't get into it. So,
yeah, they forgot the password.
Where the hell are the keys?
Well, so I really admonished. I'm not going to say who it is because they listen to this and they'd be embarrassed. But I really admonished somebody because they had the city name as their password.
That would be me.
No. No. Yeah. Right. But they had their city name.
That's right.
Name.
You publicly admonished me. Never mind. What was I thinking?
That's right. But they had their city name as their password. And it was all in lowercase. I said, hey, at a minimum, do upper and lowercase, add some spurious characters or, one or two of those, and just get in the habit of using it, and you'll start to remember it. You'll build muscle memory. And she says, well, I use that password everywhere. I said, well, that's the problem. It's super easy to guess, and you're using it on Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and Gmail and, blah, 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 blah. And so I really walked her through how to, at a minimum, do two-step authentication with her iPhone. It's really trivial.
Okay, so it's a woman who has an iPhone. That narrows it down.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Must be your daughter.
She's much more sophisticated. She would be pencil 123 though, perhaps.
Yeah, right. Now she's the one who, remember, had the software on her MacBook Air, so we were able to track it through the same
police and
get it back. Yeah. So she's way ahead of the game. Let's talk about just one more story, and then we should bring on our guest. This NASA Curiosity rover. This thing is just, honest to God, is so great. In fact, I did a post on my own blog about this panorama view that had come out, and then also put a video in. But it's just this thing is really cool. The quality of the imagery is so much better.
It is. It's open nothingness in HD.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know it's like looking at a gravel pit, but it's a gravel pit that's 350 million miles away.
Exactly. Which makes it special.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I am fascinated by that on a daily basis.
You are not.
The things that we have. Yes, I am. I am fascinated by what's going on Mars. I also enjoy all the memes of people, putting characters in odd places on Mars, but it's interesting to see and what happens.
Yeah. Well, so who are we going to bring on, Tim? You want to tell us a little bit about our guest?
Yeah, Jason Falls, well-known social media guy.
Social Media Explorer website. Yep.
Right. Been reading that for a few years now, and he's going to be in town next week for an event. So we thought we'd bring him on to kind of talk about the event. And why people might want to show up and, learn a little bit about social media.
And why they want to listen to Jason Falls.
True, because he's going to do the keynote address at this event.
The closing keynote address, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So
let's bring him on.
Those of us that have been into social media for several years now have followed your Social Media Explorer blog.
Yeah.
But can you give kind of a brief overview of who is Jason Falls and how he got into social media?
Sure, I can do that. I was born at an early age. No, I'm the CEO of Social Media Explorer, which is a company that does both information products. So we do events, obviously, and a market research product, so on and so forth. And then we also have an agency, a digital agency that works with clients on strategy and whatnot. I have a background in public relations and marketing. Worked at an agency for a while in my social media, I guess. claim to fame, or the first thing that really sort of made people look at me and say, hey, what's that guy doing? I was doing social media strategy for Jim Beam and Maker's Mark in the spirits industry when I worked at Doe Anderson, which is an agency that has worked with those brands for a while, and just did some neat things in an industry that was relatively conservative because they had to be because of regulations, and we were just doing some innovative stuff. So people started paying attention to me and asking me to speak at conferences, and it kind of snowballed from there.
So next week you're going to be here in town for the Explore event. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Explore is an event series that we created. We did a couple of events last year as kind of test pilot programs and had good response. And basically what we saw is a kind of a gap in the marketplace of, A, there's not really a lot of national events that go around the country into different cities that aren't necessarily served by other national events. And so it's basically sort of a regional city tour. And then we also noticed that there were Blog Worlds and South by Southwests and these major huge conferences that covered, you know, cast a wide net on the subject matter out there. And there were a couple of little workshops and PRSA events and stuff like that in a lot of cities that were basic 101 level stuff. But nobody was really hitting that meat in the middle where marketers and business owners and brand managers were like, wait a minute, okay, I know how to use Facebook and Twitter. I'm not an idiot. Please help me figure out how to use these strategically. Help me figure out how to measure them. Help me explore some deeper topics like influencer outreach and things of that nature so that I can really optimize and maximize how I'm using the web to drive business. And so we've sort of taken our mantra of being no nonsense straight talkers. I've gathered a number of nationally respected speakers around me, and we go on a little mini tour. We're doing five events this year, and trying to serve that marketplace of business owners and marketing managers and marketing decision makers who need a little help.
You know, the best part of this whole event, though, is the parade that precedes it when all of these speakers come walking in. It's just a beautiful thing. It's like the circus. It's like they come in, they set up a tent.
Hallelujah, you shall be healed.
Right. So, Jason, this is Phil Wilson. And, the one thing that I've noticed on the agenda that is very appealing to me is the B2B stuff, because we see a lot or hear a lot about social media case studies that are all very B2C, that reach... large audiences of thousands or hundreds of thousands of possible consumers or participants. B2B is a much tougher nut to crack on the social media side. I work with a couple of clients that their business is to reach other businesses, and trying to come up with the best way to use social media to build leads in a business environment. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between a B2B and a B2C environment or social media strategy?
Well, sure. I mean, I think the big thing that we like to let people know is it's not a purple unicorn. B2B is actually in a lot of ways much more conducive an environment to use social media, because the social media, like if you're looking to drive sales and leads in social media, it's really a best practice, if you will, to build relationships and nurture leads along over time. Yes, you can probably find ways to use social channels to sell something right away, but it's really more of a communications channel that's about giving and receiving, listening as well as talking. And so it's much more relational in nature. And that is the B2B sales cycle. You've got sometimes 18, 24, 36 month sales cycles in the B2B world. And it's very much about nurturing those leads and nurturing those relationships over time. So there's some really neat parallels there. And I would even argue that B2B is probably a little bit, I wouldn't say easier. I would just say it's more natural of a fit with social media marketing. But there certainly are some circumstantial differences. You definitely have to be much more targeted on the audience you're trying to reach. Having a Facebook page for a product or service that is marketed to a B2B audience may not necessarily be the smartest thing in the whole wide world, because A, you don't know if your audience is there. And by what I mean by that is, well, I guess you do kind of know your audience is there, because quite frankly, almost everybody's on Facebook. So Facebook might make sense, but people don't go to Facebook to conduct business. You don't go to Facebook to engage with a brand or to learn about products and services. You go to Facebook basically for two things. You either go there to look at pictures of your grandkids or stalk your ex. So you have to be able to figure out if that audience is there, how are you going to funnel them to your Facebook page? How are you going to attract them and engage them in an environment that is going to be conducive to and comfortable to them? LinkedIn might make more sense. So finding the audience is more difficult. But once you do find that audience, I've found in case studies that we've used in the past that it's actually much easier to get a lot of traction in the B2B space because people sometimes are actually surprised that there's even something there in the first place that has something to do with their work. So there are some significant challenges, but that's one of the reasons why we've brought people like Kip Bodner, who is one of the co-authors of the B2B social marketing book, and several other sort of expert level folks in the B2B space to the event.
Sounds like it's going to be great.
So this is Steve Borsch, Jason. One of the things that I'm curious about is just because I've poked around a lot, and I'm big on learning and empowering people to take their own next steps for their own particular businesses and so on. You have joined forces with three other folks, and you have Exploring Social Media, which is a learning site. It's a membership site and all of that. And can you talk about that? And can you talk about the sorts of things that you're driving toward with empowering people to embrace social media? I mean, are there ROI things on there? I've seen some things, you know, how to create a Facebook ad campaign is most recent and so forth. But how deep do you go? Are there ways that people can interact with one another in forums and so forth?
Yeah. So Exploring Social Media, you know, we do a lot with our events and whatnot, and certainly our agency to help businesses that, you know, have a budget to spend on, you know, either conferences or strategy, so on and so forth. But we wanted to create something that was really more geared toward individuals who maybe, you know, they want to get a leg up on their coworkers or, you know, help their company internally, but don't necessarily have a big budget to do that. They just want to get smart about social media, and they want to ask questions of kind of trusted, reliable, you know, resources within the industry. And so it's a $25 a month subscription. We have a lot of small business folks in there, but we also have a lot of what I would call sort of account reps at agencies who are trying to juggle a dozen things an hour for every client they have, and stopping to figure out the solution to a social media problem is not going to be high on their priority list. So they can jump into Exploring Social Media and say, hey, I need to figure out how to measure you know, leads from LinkedIn. How do you suggest I do that? And then they can go about their busy day, and then as soon as we have an answer for them, we'll answer it and they'll get a notification. So it's an easy sort of in and out question and answer place for folks, but we also certainly have some evergreen content in there that helps people self-guide if they want to. So we built it really for small business owners and individuals who need a little bit of help. They don't necessarily want to go to LinkedIn Answers. They don't necessarily want to go to Quora and ask this broad audience of people that they don't even know. We said, hey, if you trust us, and we've got Social Media Explorer and all this other free content out there that can establish that trust. If you trust us and you rely on us for answers, we want to make it easy for you to ask us. And so I've gathered a few other, you know, expert level friends and practitioners in there, and you come and you ask us questions and we answer your questions specific to your situation, not just in a broad situation. I had one guy in there who works at an agency one time asked me, hey, I'm trying to come up with, you know, some strategies and some ideas on using social media to help a retirement home. And so do you have any thoughts? And so for 10 minutes, I just sat down and dumped a bunch of thoughts on how I would do it for a retirement home. Obviously they're rather generic thoughts, but specific to the retirement home. And he, you know, responded back, holy crap, this is awesome. There's three or four ideas in here I never would have thought of. So it's just an easy access place for individuals to come and get help.
So there is I see this, I'm not in it, but I see the community. So there is a forum inside.
The way it works is, it's basically built like a, basically like an online college course type thing. You go in and there's all these different lessons and you can ask questions within the lessons, just like a typical like blog comment. But the entire site is actually built around the ability for you to ask whatever question you have without even considering the content. So you can just go to the top of any page, click ask and say, hey, Jason, I need to know how to connect Twitter to Facebook. And then we get notified that there's a new question and I can answer you by, you know, answering, you know, typing out an answer. I can turn on my webcam and look in the camera and record an answer and sort of give you a little pep talk kind of answer as well. Or I can actually record a screencast and actually show you step by step what to do.
Yeah.
So it's real easy for me to be able to serve that, you know, customer who says, hey, I just need, you know, 5 minutes of Jason's time. It's actually, if you think about it in the consulting world, you get a lot of people who say, hey, can I pick your brain? And I say, absolutely. You can be a member of this site and you can pick my brain as often as you want, because I can jump in and answer questions really efficiently there.
Right. Well, and also it establishes a floor, because there's nothing worse than going in, and I've done it at clients where, you know, I come in and do a 101. And you've got a team sitting around a table and, you know, 25% of them have no clue.
Right.
And so, you know, I always have taken steps to help people get a clue before I come in. Mm-hmm. So you're not going down, you know, you're not, as my wife describes, going back to the book of Genesis to start all over. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the more frustrating things is in our business, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, is when you go in to talk to a client and the first thing they say is something like, okay, what is Twitter? Like, look, if you're asking that question, I'm not the right guy for you. You need a little bit of background before you are going to spend money on an agency to come in and do things for your business. Because ultimately, if you don't know the answers to those questions ahead of time, you're going to be really frustrated with us because we're going to talk over your head real quick without realizing it. So Exploring Social Media is a place that's, you know, it's $25 a month and it's cancel anytime. So it's not, you know, for the price of a book, you can join for 30 days and probably learn more than you can learn out of any book.
Yeah.
And then if it's useful for you, you can, you know, keep paying. And if it's not, you can cancel. It's not a big risk there.
Well, you have a friend of mine and a guy I respect deeply doing one of the panels or doing one of the sessions, which is Tom Webster. And who's Tom Webster? Tom's a great guy at Edison Media, knows a lot about social media. What's his topic going to be?
So Tom and Edison Research have, you know, put together The Social Habit, which is sort of the, in my opinion, one of the most respected, probably I'm looking for a word here. It's the best and most accurate consumer usage research in social media outside of what you would get from Pew Internet and American Life. The difference is Pew Internet and American Life is certainly free research, but it's very broad, it's very generic, yeah. and you can't control it. Well, with Edison, they're a custom research firm, so they go out and they do research based on, you know, feedback from their clients on what their clients want to know about the nation's use of social media and new media. And actually, they've done this research annually up until this year. And then starting actually right now, we're getting ready to field another survey. And I say we because myself, Jay Baer, and Mark Schaefer have joined Tom Webster and Edison as partners in the new version of The Social Habit, which is a quarterly survey of Americans 12 and up, representative sample.
Oops.
On the use of social media. So The Social Habit has now become a quarterly research product. And a new survey is going in the field in the coming weeks, which will produce, you know, even more accurate and updated and specific information that both, you know, companies and brands want to know about, but also that we as social media thinkers and consultants have in our brains as well. And so Tom is going to present information about the Americans' social habit. You know, how many people are using which platform? What do they do when they're on those platforms? You know, what is this whole, as marketers and as brand folks, what kind of concern do we have to have about this notion that there's now a third or a fourth screen in our entertainment viewpoint when we're watching television or on the computer? And so it's having a nice foundation, and he's going to help us build a nice foundation of understanding of consumer habits and consumer usage of digital and new media tools so that we can make smarter marketing decisions. I almost prefer to have Tom go first at these events, because he kind of level sets everything for us. Okay, now we know what people are doing and why and how. Now let's figure out how we can use that information to make smarter marketing decisions for us.
Well, it's going to be a great event. It happens 2 days next week at the DoubleTree. I believe it's a DoubleTree now. Is that right? Isn't that what that hotel is now? A DoubleTree?
Yeah, I think so.
Over there in. Well, I guess that is that officially Bloomington?
I'm not sure, because I'm not from the area. I know it's the DoubleTree Park Place. That's what I know.
That's what it is.
We'll put a link we have a link in the show notes for it. So,
and we also have a nice deal for people that are listening to Minovate. So, yes. If you use what is it? The promo code is Minovate. Yes. I know it's hard to remember.
MINOV8 and
looks like it's all uppercase too.
All uppercase, all caps. Minovate,
and that's worth $200.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
Well, yeah. So, Jason, before we let you go, describe what the perfect audience member would be. Are you looking for brand people or marketing people or
people
a combination?
People that don't throw things. How about that?
Or people that can afford $250 for a 2-day event?
Yeah. I think all of the above certainly apply. I think the people that are going to get the most out of this event are what I would call marketing decision makers. People who are either business owners or CMOs or directors of marketing, or even, marketing managers who have budget to spend on marketing. They are in charge of digital and social and email and so on and so forth. But they may also be in charge of other things too. And they need a little help figuring out what this digital landscape is like, what they should be prioritizing, what tools and software service providers are out there to help them figure this out and manage it efficiently. We've got a lot of great sponsors, obviously, that help us put these events on, that are there to say, hey, we've got some tools that can help you with it. And we don't put sponsors on stage to do sales pitches either, which is a key differentiator between us and a lot of other conferences. So if there's someone from a sponsor on stage, they are ordered to be useful to the audience and not sell their product. So I think it's anybody who needs that level of help. Yes. You're probably going to need to have a little bit of a budget to go to an event like this, but $250 with that discount is pretty solid for the amount of knowledge you're going to get. And yes, you're probably going to need to be at a company that has a marketing budget and wants to leverage the web or improve how you're leveraging the web to grow your business. I can promise you this, though, man, we're not going to sit and talk about how you can hold hands in a circle and sing kumbaya with your fans a lot. That's what a lot of other social media folks do.
Thank God.
We're all about knowing that if you add the word marketing to the phrase social media, that you're talking about business, and you better be able to measure it, and you better be able to use it strategically, and you better be able to show some return from it. So we're going to hit on those topics. And so people who are serious about business are going to like this.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Good deal.
Well, we'll see you next week.
All right.
Thanks, Jason. All righty.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great one. We'll see you soon.
All right.
So there you go, Jason Falls, ladies and gentlemen, from Explore Social Media.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a good event. It really does.
It does. It really does. And I would strongly recommend that people check out the show notes and look at Social Media Explorer and some of the things that they do. And also, if you're on the hunt for tools, I did want to ask him more about that, but it's not the right time. Because that's the number one thing that I get asked constantly, which is, what tools should I use to manage all of our businesses' social media accounts? And we all know the obvious ones, Hootsuite. Okay, great. But what else is out there?
And one of their sponsors is Raven Tools, and I've been using Raven now for a while, and it's a pretty good little tool. I got to tell you, it is. It doesn't have any Google Plus integration yet, but that's probably forward thinking of them.
Yeah, well, then Salesforce has they're a small business and nonprofit and another layer up, CRM play, which is pretty inexpensive. And I've got a couple of clients on Salesforce, and they purchased Radian 6. And I don't know the pricing on what you would have to pay to add that to the small business, nonprofit, mid-sized company platform. But, you know, the stuff is emerging because everybody wants it.
Yep.
Yep.
Indeed. And one other thing we didn't touch on is he has Eric Hansen and Jennifer Kane speaking there at Explore.
Locally,
so it's good to see some local folks on the stage as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, one thing we skipped over to get Jason on was this this whole thing about the benefits of working at Google, continue after death. Wasn't that incredible?
It's awesome.
And so basically for everyone listening, essentially what was discovered is that if somebody's spouse dies, Google keeps paying 50% of the employee's salaries for 10 years after they die.
Yep.
And if they have any dependent children, Google will support them with $1,000 a month until they reach the age of 19.
Or 23
if they're going to college.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think that's pretty sweet.
No kidding.
It's a horrendously good benefit.
It's incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah, Google's a great company.
And then also I should mention that Julio Ojeda Zapata was on Tech News today, and they were talking about...
But he was on yesterday's show.
Did I say today? Yeah, that's
yeah. You said Tech News today, so it's Tech News yesterday, actually.
right. Okay, you're right.
And, no, it was Tech News today yesterday. If
right.
That makes sense.
But what it was, he did a great job as always, and they did talk about the Square Starbucks announcement, and that's absolutely huge. If you haven't been following that, essentially, Square, this little startup, ended up getting a deal with Starbucks, and Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, invested $25 million in his company, is going to take a board seat, and they're going to roll this out in all 7,000 stores. And for example, you'll be able to walk in with geofencing and walk up to the register, and your phone will tell the register who you are, and they'll just sit, before they hand you the coffee, they'll have you confirm your name, and you say your name and you walk out with your coffee. And it's paid for. That's pretty cool.
Of course, does that make that makes your coffee that much more expensive, though, right?
Well, yeah. If you're paying with a credit card, you'll be paying for that coffee for a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't there going to be a charge on that? Is there a deal with Square that they get a percentage, or what's?
You know, they didn't go into that detail. Did you see that, Tim? I don't know.
Yeah. And well, that's the way Square makes money. They're just like a regular money processing system.
So your $2 cup of coffee is going to cost you what, 2.25 now? 2.20? 2.10? What is it going to be?
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly if you pay it as the payer or if the receiver. I think it's just like PayPal. So it's the Starbucks in this case.
Yeah,
pays the fee that Square gets, whatever the percentage of the deal is. So you as a customer pay your, $2 for your black coffee or whatever.
But ultimately that's going to get passed on to the consumer, right?
I don't know.
Starbucks isn't going to take a hit on that.
I wouldn't think so because, a lot of people pay with credit cards now. It's probably a better deal than they're getting from Visa.
Well, yeah, bad.
Yeah.
If you're a Visa person that pays off right away, no, it's not.
Well, and who knows what the delta will be if they'll be able to negotiate lower rates or something. But I'll put a link in the show notes if you're interested.
Sorry, didn't mean to be a buzzkill there, guys. I'm always looking at the cost.
You're always a buzzkill. But if anybody wants to really get into this as a topic, I would encourage you to watch this Tech News today. And also, by the way, look at the quality of Julio's video. So he used an external Logitech HD webcam, and I was really impressed. It looked really great. His audio sucked. I didn't tell him that, but anyway.
Well, now he knows.
Well, you did now.
That's right. Oh, geez. Sorry, Julio.
Yeah, it was actually 2 days ago. I'll put this in the show notes.
Oh, I just did.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, got it.
It was called Squarebox.
Right. So what about upcoming events?
I think there's an Explore Minnesota thing next week.
Yeah, it's next week.
I think so.
Don't get $200 off with the Minivate coupon code.
You know, I noticed that. I think that that's all still on their website, though. I think anybody can get that, tell you the
truth. Yeah, yeah. I would think you'd have to be very not with it to pay the full $450.
Yeah.
Well,
because,
you know what?
Because it is right there on the website. Another coupon code. But use Minivate so they know where it came from.
Because they'll think we're cool.
Exactly. And so, the three people that, that use the code, they'll say, hey, those Minivate guys. Those
guys are awesome.
Wait a minute. That means one of the two people that listen to us would actually have to tell a friend the code.
Right. So it's, So they have a very, very small, but very engaged audience.
There you go.
Actually, out of the hundreds and hundreds of listeners that we have, many of them.
I thought it was thousands and thousands.
No, not yet. Many of them don't care about discounts because they just pay full freight. So, anyway. And then, the social media breakfast with, Lee Oden about his book, I'm sure. And he'll talk about that, but so social media content marketing, I'm reading more and more about, people really focused on not only the SEO reasons to have great content, but now the marketing, because when people search for a topic, Google's indexing content higher than they are topics. They want to absolutely parse the content and deliver it. So the whole point of content marketing is attracting people, right? Mm-hmm. And Tim, you're probably all over this.
Yeah. That's really the only way to do SEO these days. I mean, there's still a few things you can game, but for the most part, the Google and everybody else is looking at good content, frequently updated, linked to trusted sources and larger websites than you are. And, I think that I'm sure Lee goes through that in his book. I haven't read it yet, but, it would be interesting to hear what his opinion of Google Plus is, since, that's the only social network that is sucked into Google. So all the content you put in there is immediately indexed. And so that becomes, an important element of your SEO strategy, I think.
Right.
Well, it's interesting still, though, they're still having a hard time defining exactly what the impact is of Google Plus on SEO. So I'm still not 100% sure they know what the impact is yet at Google. Still working on that.
There's that.
Man, you're a negative Nelly today.
No, I'm not being negative Nelly. I had a nice meeting with the folks at Google and asked them, so how does what I do in Google Plus impact my PageRank?
It doesn't.
Yeah, there you
go. Well, they wouldn't tell you anyway because PageRank is secret.
Well, but still, if they're going to force you to use Google Plus because it's indexed by Google, they ought to tell you what the outcome's going to be. And what is the best way to impact what happens to your PageRank?
Well, I'm sure it doesn't hurt you.
No, it doesn't hurt you, not at all. But then again, is anybody seeing it on Google Plus? Or is it just showing up in your, is it just impacting your search results moderately? I mean, so anyway. I'm always looking at that stuff. I want to know because there's so much stuff to do, guys. There's so much stuff you have to do in social media. Remember, this ain't free. As everybody thinks that social media is this free marketing outlet, it's not free. And there is so much to do that you want to be able to make sure that you have priorities as to what, what's going to impact what you do the most. So
that's right.
That's why I always ask these questions.
A lot of opportunity cost there. Yep.
There is.
Absolutely.
So I'm not just being a buzzkill.
So who put this Minnesota Developers Conference in?
I did.
Yeah. What's that about?
It's
that about?
It's a thing for developers,
and it's conference is my guess.
Any particular kind of developer?
Well, it's anybody working in .NET and Android and HTML5 and all of that. I mean, and all these users groups are getting together and having this conference at the DoubleTree in Bloomington, and it's September 13th, a couple $100 event. I'm sure they won't have any discounts, but it's a place. It's a place for everybody to up their game
and
with
Jeff
these
Brand,
various technologies.
Jeff Brand's going to be there for Microsoft. I see. We've had Jeff at Mobile March a couple of times. Jeff's very smart guy and well worth your time and effort.
Great.
If you're a developer, if you're into that sort of thing.
Well, or if you have developers that you would like to go and figure out how to embrace HTML5, I tell you what, I've been reading and reading and reading about the HTML5 wave that's washing over everything because of mobile, obviously. But that it's becoming something that is really high on the radar of leaders who are saying, why aren't we doing something with HTML5, even though they don't know what it is? They just know how to say the acronym.
But I'm kind of waiting for HTML6, actually.
Right.
I'm waiting for 8. I'm holding out for 8.
I think that's going to be more awesome than 5.
You know, in all seriousness, I'm waiting for more incredible tools. There's actually a new tool out called Motion Composer. It's in beta. It's an HTML5 animation tool, so you can do Flash-like animation creation in HTML5. And so I'm kind of toying with the idea of buying it and playing with it just to see what it's like. But that, you know, we need higher level tools. I mean, there's no question. So
there's some great people at this event.
Yeah, there is.
Jeremy Haberman's going to be there. He's worked with LiveFront. Also, Mike Bollinger from LiveFront. So yeah. there's Sam Kirchmeier from LiveFront. There's great folks here. We've had a lot of these folks on in some way, shape, or form. So this is I like these guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike Bollinger is just a great guy. He's just he's doing a lot of good stuff, and he's really well connected. Minnesota Bloggers Conference on the 22nd at Alina.
Always a good time.
Yeah,
September.
That's something that for sure I'm going to go to. So,
will you be blogging while you're there?
Me?
Yeah.
What's a blog?
There. Everybody blogs while they're there.
Yeah. Yuck! 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 Yeah.
Exactly. Yuck! 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 Yuck!
Well, gentlemen,
there you go. Another podcast in the can. So,
that's right.
Well, listen, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
See ya.
Take care.